Hey everyone, and welcome to Divi Nation Episode 4. Divi Nation is a podcast and YouTube show by Elegant Themes, a leader in the premium WordPress theme and plugin market. I'm your host, Nathan B. Weller, and our topic this episode is mastering the final 5%, taking your website from good to great. To help explore this topic, I'll be joined by prominent Divi community member, SJ James. SJ is a web designer and content specialist out of Portsmouth in the UK. He's the founder of GrittySocial.com, where he and development partner Mark Hughes create websites, themes, and plugins, create and manage social media content and strategy, as well as help educate others at the intersection of web design, WordPress, and content. Or as they like to say, we make epic things happen online. SJ, welcome to Divi Nation.
Thank you very much for having me. You made me sound like a rock star there, so that's good.
That's the goal. I mean, that's all we're trying to do here. I'm so glad that you're with us. We're pretty different time zones. You're in the UK. I'm here in Ohio. I think we're both kind of close to the end of our days. You're way past the end of your day, workday wise.
Yeah, probably. It's 10 o'clock here, but I'm still wearing trousers and I'm not drunk. So, two positive things.
Awesome. Well, are you ready to get into our first segment of the day called This Week in WordPress?
I'm very ready. Let's go.
All right, let's do it. This week in WordPress, there are three articles that caught my eye. I sent them ahead of time to SJ so that he could read them and that we could talk about them. Article number one, Drafting Pseudocode Before Building Anything, by Tom McFarlane. This article by Tom talks about the importance of using what he calls pseudocode to map out the solution to whatever problem he's trying to solve before jumping in and actually building it or doing it. He gives a few examples of what he means by pseudocode. Mind mapping in a notebook or on a whiteboard, using another code language that is good for rapid development, or something else entirely. So I want to talk about this not so much because the idea or the term pseudocode really means a lot to me personally, but more so because I really like the concept of taking time before a project, whether it's design or development, or in my case, writing, to think and plan before any attempt is actually made at execution. This is a theme that Melissa Love and I talked about a lot in the last episode, and as it pertains to storytelling design, and I think it's a good recurring theme to touch on. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think looking at the article, actually, I think a lot of that rang true for me, what he was talking about, and it's not just that, again, it's not the pseudocode thing, but it's the whole planning thing and making sure that you put time into it and allow time in, you know, setting a budget for a project to really sit down and plan. One of the things that I had a teacher when I was at school, I did woodwork, and he used to say, measure twice, cut once. And I think that that's true in this case, is that you need to make sure that you think about all the things that can go wrong and then sort of break those down and go, okay, so how am I going to overcome that? Because the problem is that if you do this stuff as and when you're building, you'll fix a patch with a patch with a patch with a patch, and then but you'll get yourself down the rabbit hole, and then you'll be like, okay, so what was the original problem? Because I've now got 10 problems, you know?
Right.
So I think if you just take that time first of all to plan and say, right, okay, this is what I'm going to do, this is the problems that I'm likely to have while I'm doing it, and just get all of that stuff out of the way. Kind of like a Murphy's List, if you like, kind of, you know, what can go wrong, make a list and just say, okay, these are the things I'm going to do beforehand to make sure that I, you know, I'm on point and this thing goes smoothly. I think even just kind of, I mean, we're talking about the last 5%. I think the first 5% is just as important, and we need to make sure that you get that stuff right. So yeah, I really like the article. Yeah.
Great. Article number two, these Things I Believe, A Blogger's Creed, by Bob Dunn. Bob Dunn is the owner and operator of BobWP.com. In this article, he provides us with 10 things that he believes in, specifically things that affect his approach to blogging. Among them are what you see is what you get. That's his take on being genuine. Everyone has something to bring to the table. That's him on recognizing voices in his community. And I believe in lifelong learning, just a sort of broad creed or code that he applies to himself and his blogging. You know, I specifically want to talk about this one because, one, I'm a big believer in creating an alignment between personal, corporate, I don't necessarily like that word, but it works, personal, corporate, and community values, so that when you create content, everyone in the conversation's on the same page, they're speaking the same language. And then two, because I know you, SJ, you do a lot of content work, and I wanted to get your take because, you know, this is more this episode's more about like design and development, but I didn't want to leave that aspect of it out, and I wanted to give you a chance to talk to something along those lines.
Yeah, I think when we do social media, when we're talking about Twitter and things like that, one of the first things people ask is, should I have two accounts? Should I have a personal one that I use to talk to my friends? And should I have a business one where I concentrate on kind of marketing and talking about my business? And the advice that I always give is no, have one and kind of make that your personal one and your business one. Because people that are interested in your business are interested in why you're doing that. Mm-hmm. And that's as much about your personal life as it is about, you know, there's only so much of your personal stuff that should be on social media anyway. And I think you've got to get that kind of across, and you've got to be a real person on the end of that business. You see it within the Divi community, you know, a lot of the people that come together and collaborate for work have actually gone on to kind of friend request each other outside of that environment and have even become friends.
Yeah.
So, you know, and your friend is much more likely to buy from you or to turn to you to provide a service than somebody who's a stranger. So I think your aim and this article is actually all about kind of alluding to community and how important that is when it comes to content. And I think that that couldn't be more true. I think if you've got a good community behind you, you've got people just willing to share your blogs almost before they've read them. You know, you've got people that are willing to kind of go that extra mile and even defend you. Somebody else could come in and with a negative comment, and you've got people kind of jumping in before you've even seen it, you know?
Yeah, that's a really good point about the, you know, community kind of having your back. I mean, if everybody knows who you are and where you stand and they're on that same page with you, it doesn't really take a lot for them to, you know, either defend you, come to your defense, or even just like, you know, maybe you don't word something the right way, or maybe you don't communicate real clearly. They're willing to do the extra work to understand what you're saying, elaborate on it, and still pass it on, which if they saw that from maybe somebody else, they'd be like, well, it's not quite up to snuff or this or that. It's not an excuse to make bad content, but I think it goes a long way in making your content just that much more effective to those people.
Yeah, and I think with anything that you put out online, there's going to be groups of people. There's going to be people that are seeing this and they've seen lots of stuff from you, so they're able to judge this in terms of your overall kind of presence online. And then there's going to be people that are seeing it for the first time, and they're kind of literally making their snap judgment on whether or not you're good at what you're doing. And it's kind of like you need that community to kind of, if you do have a bad day or you do say something that gets taken out of context or doesn't quite mean what you meant it to, you need those people to kind of go, hey, no, you know, he understands what he's talking about, and kind of jump to your defense. And you see that a lot, you know, especially within forums and stuff like that. We talk a lot about Facebook and things like that. You could say one thing that gets taken out of context, and then before you've had a chance to really kind of say, no, that's not what I meant, other people will jump in and say, well, I'm sure that, you know, he's just having a day or something like that. You can move on, you know. Whereas if you're kind of, if you don't have any community or any kind of friends online, if you like,
for an outsider into the conversation,
it's very hard to kind of gain that ground back and kind of keep that friendly kind of thing going. One of the things that I like about ET, actually, Elegant Themes, should probably say the whole name, is that they're very good at kind of drip feeding that content. And even, you know, from Nick Roach downwards, everybody's very involved in that community conversation. So it's never like you feel that you're saying something that's not being listened to. You always feel like everybody at Elegant Themes is listening to you and you're listening to them, and it's a mutual exchange rather than just kind of one-way marketing, which I think is really, really good for a company like Elegant Themes to have that kind of community around their products. And it shows in kind of Divi 2.4, 2.5, you can see that the community is being listened to. And that you can see it kind of all the things that people are asking for, and people saying, okay, well, I'm finding it hard to do this, this, and this, are being brought in and integrated into the product. And I think, you know, from that perspective, it makes sense for Elegant Themes to do that. And from our perspective, we obviously love it because we get a better product at the end of it, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, that's a good segue into the third article, because the third article is Divi 2.5 has arrived, featuring the Divi Role Editor, Live Preview, and much more. So this was... as of this recording, this was just yesterday, but when it comes out, it'll have been about a week from now. And I guess I just wanted to see, you know, this is obviously big news for us at Elegant Themes, for the Divi community. And I think this release did a lot of cool things, not just with features, but also in terms of like putting Elegant Themes in a good place to start releasing new products at a faster clip. What do you think about that?
I think it's an exciting time actually to be part of this community, because you're seeing these things that we've really anticipated, especially between 2.2 and 2.4. We kind of had this time where we were kind of like, okay, so we're looking forward to seeing these features because of the kind of teasers that we were being given in the blogs. We kind of, you know, just get there already. We want this product. we wanted it yesterday. You know, you've got people putting off building websites because they're waiting for this kind of this new part to come out, because they know how much easier it's going to make their builds. So to see it kind of that roadmap developing at a good speed now is really quite exciting, because it's kind of like, okay, so what's coming next? And especially with 2.5, with this roles editor and things like that being brought in, it's huge, you know. And you can see this kind of move from something that was maybe similar to things like Visual Composer and other themes with page builders built in, to something that is just surpassing kind of the other things that are out there. And I know people keep saying about kind of Divi being now more of a framework than a theme. I think you're definitely seeing that it's the page builder that's becoming the framework rather than the theme, which is even more exciting, because you can actually take it off and ship it into other products.
If you want. Anything. I mean, opening up the door of the Divi Builder plugin, I think, is going to do a lot for everybody who's become, you know, what will now be considered early adopters of Divi, because everybody who now has an expertise in Divi will also be an expert in the Divi Builder, and their reach for, you know, taking on clients or for working with other websites or people who have existing themes and don't really want to leave them, you know, they're going to be able to go into any environment on any WordPress build and now do stuff that previously they couldn't have done. It's just really going to open up a lot of opportunities for people, and I think it's cool to see the community on that sort of precipice of something really big happening for a lot of them.
I think it's definitely exciting. I think one of the things that we do a lot of is kind of fix work. So we get calls from people that aren't necessarily looking for new sites. They're looking to have things touched up on existing sites. And it will be things like the Divi theme's been used. So they've gone online and they've looked for people that are using the Divi theme to build websites. And then they reach out to us and they say, okay, I need some help with this, because actually I don't know what I'm doing. And there's going to be more of that, because this page builder is going to be used on other sites. More developers are going to kind of embrace it and say, okay, I'm going to use it. Even things like having the role editor and locking down content is going to make it so much easier for those types of clients, because you can say, right, okay, we've put this onto your site. We've locked it down. So actually, you can't mess anything up now. You know, all of the stuff we've given you access to is stuff we feel comfortable that, you know, you're not going to explode your website by using. So I think it's a great time. I think it's not just the page builder either, but it's the using of Monarch and Bloom in amalgamation with that other stuff. You've kind of got this full package, start to end, of these little things that just make up a perfect website. I think before Bloom, one of the things that came up a lot was, okay, so what do I use to kind of get people to opt in and stuff like that? Since Bloom, that's been so much easier. Before Monarch, people were asking, okay, so what share buttons work well with Divi? Now we have something built by the same people that built that theme that's available to us, you know? So it's very good to see those products working together. It's very rare that you'll go onto a Divi site and not see Bloom being used or not see Monarch being used, because they just work so well together. So it'll be interesting to see what the next plugin is, or what the next thing is that comes out from Elegant Themes. But I'm sure it will just continue to building this kind of environment where, you know, cool things happen.
Absolutely. Well, that does it for this week in WordPress. If you'd like to read the articles we discussed, you can find them linked in the video description or within the blog post for this episode over at eleganttemes.com. That'll be Divi Nation, Episode 4. So, SJ, I think a lot of Divi users are probably familiar with your work. I mean, we featured a few of your tools and plugins on Divi Nation already, such as your Divi Child Theme Builder last episode.
I have to thank you for featuring, by the way, because there's been like 200 people use it since it was on the podcast. So that's fantastic.
Fantastic. Now, so that's really so that's new. Cool. So that's really good numbers for how new that tool is.
Yeah.
So we know your work. Now we want to know you. What's your story, man?
Okay, so I kind of fell into this by accident, really. When I left school, I joined the army. I said to myself, about 7 years old, I watched my auntie joined the army and said, right, that's what I'm going to do. So I kind of almost switched off a little bit in school because it was like, I don't need to know this. I'm going to go in the army. And I kind of, you know, and that's what I did. I went in, and 5 years of that, I kind of found out that there was lots of that stuff that I liked and there was lots of that stuff that I didn't. And actually, it's probably not something that I want to do for 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I started looking at things that I could do outside of that. The natural sort of migration for me was to go into sort of security work. So I started looking at setting up my own company that did CCTV and sort of basic security, sort of, you know, mall cop sort of security stuff. And so I did that. And one of the things that I did is, obviously, when you're starting your own business and you're working on a budget, you have to do your own stuff. So I started doing my own marketing, which is really where I sort of fell into the social media stuff and working out how you get good at marketing via social channels. Mm-hmm. And it was where I fell into the kind of web development stuff as well. So before that, probably my only interaction with development was through my phone. So I'd done a few things on sort of building different software, different operating systems for my phone.
Oh, cool.
Through a website forum. And that was probably my only experience. So I went to kind of build this website. It was on Wix. It was kind of, you know, the most basic of basic websites that you could get. But I really enjoyed it. And I found that actually that this is something that I really like doing. So alongside the social stuff and the marketing stuff, I realized that was the part of the business I was most excited about, and the security stuff, not so much. So I managed to get a job through kind of almost a made-up CV with this company that did marketing, and I sort of learned as I was on the job, really. And then I went from that into another company called MRM, who are a really, really great financial services PR company in London. And the guys there were, you know, my boss there, Michael, was just fantastic, and he was really good at kind of teaching me as we went, and we just kind of built up this small unit, the digital part of that company we created between sort of Michael and myself into what it is now. And I kind of went, okay, so there's parts of this job again that I like in the same sort of scenario that I had before. There's parts I like and there's parts I don't. The parts that I do like is the web development and the social media stuff. The parts I don't like is the having to get up at 6 o'clock to make it to London by 9 o'clock, having to finish at London at 6 and be home by 9 o'clock. It was kind of like I was seeing my children for about 5 minutes in the morning and not at all at night. So I decided that the thing to do was to start my own company, and that's where kind of Gritty came along. I was doing it alongside my stuff at MRM for about 6 months, just kind of dipping my toe into the water to see how I got on. Managed to get a couple of retained clients, enough to give me kind of that confidence to go, okay, well, I'm going to do this full time now. And then about 4 months ago, that's what I did. So I just kind of, I went into the office, I quit my day job, said thanks for everything. And I've been doing this full time ever since. So, and obviously you have worries when you quit a job and you sort of go freelance. You go, okay, what if no one likes me? What if I get no clients? What if I don't make anywhere near enough money and my family starve? But you know, I got over that quite quickly, and very luckily, my old boss was actually one of my first clients. So it's great to have that kind of boost in your confidence that, you know, your old boss is willing to kind of put money into your new business. And he hired me to build a website for a company called Greedy Goddess. If you're going to Google that, it's greedy with an IE. If you Google it with a Y, you get lots of porn stuff, so don't do that.
we'll get the exact URL from you to put in the video description.
That's probably safer. Yeah, so he hired me to build that. I built it on Divi, shared it with the community, got loads of positive feedback about the fact that, you know, through CSS and things like that, it just looked completely different to anything that most people had seen before. And that almost became the best referral tool I could have done, because I got so much of my work that I currently have now through that website, because people were messaging me on Facebook or sending me emails and saying, look, we've seen the site, we love it, could you build us something similar, or could you do something with this site, or I'm trying to do that thing that you did with those people on the front on my site, can you show me how? So probably about 50% of the work that I got in the first sort of month was through that site. So
that's fantastic.
You know, yeah, and it's And it doesn't look like it's slowing down. And, you know, we're in the last quarter, which is usually, I hear, I'm still learning. So, you know, I hear that's quite a slow time for developers normally.
Yeah, I think it can be.
Yeah, and we're still busy, you know, so I'm positive for 2016 and to see what we can do next year.
Yeah, that's great. So, just to retrace those steps, you went from high school to military to security to financial services to websites and social media to specifically WordPress. That's quite the trajectory.
Yeah.
With varied, you know, very varied trajectory. And it sounds like the common thread was that you just sort of kept, you know, following what it was that you were interested in until you got to sort of the root of it and then stayed there. I'm curious because I actually have had kind of what would look like on paper is a varied directory, but there's that same kind of common thread. Have you found that there are experiences or skills that you took from each of those stages and that have like stayed with you and become applicable to what you're doing today?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's no job that I've had in the last sort of 10 years that I can look back on and ever think of negatively, because I've taken positive things from all of those. And if you go back as far as even the army, I wouldn't be having a conversation with you like this here without the army, because before the army, I completely lacked confidence. I just couldn't kind of get the courage to kind of go out and believe in myself to do something. If the one thing that I took from that is that, well, there's two things. One is show up on time, and I think that that's important in any job. And the other thing is just to kind of really have confidence in yourself and project yourself in the best way possible. And I think both of those things are really kind of imperative in any job. And then going through to kind of, I wouldn't have got to the final realization that actually I love web design and stuff. When I was younger, I used to love drawing, and I'd do, when I was in the army, I did tattoos for friends. So there was always kind of this design element or artistic element to my life, but it was never kind of focused on any one thing. This brings together so many of the things that I love. So looking at code, problem solving, kind of taking something that just doesn't exist. I love the whole creation thing, where it doesn't exist before you touch it, you know. Even if you look at WordPress and Divi, you install a blank Divi and it's a canvas, you know. There's so much that you can do with it, and you just kind of, you get to go, right, okay, I drew this thing on paper a month ago and now it exists and people are visiting it, and it's kind of, it's making a company money, and I think that's really, really good. And it's just something that if you'd have asked me, you know, all that time ago whether or not I'd be doing this, I'd have said absolutely not. If you'd have asked me even a year ago that I'd understand this code and be able to look at it and go, okay, well, that's good, that's good, that's wrong. It's like the Matrix, you know, you look at CSS and you kind of know exactly what it's going to look like when you put it on a screen. I'd have never, ever thought myself in a position to kind of do that even a year ago. So it's you know, it's exciting. I have to keep reminding myself I'm 27, not 37, because kind of, that whole sort of backstory seems to have taken up more time than it should, you know?
Yeah, well, to the point of the CSS and, you know, saying just 1 year ago that you would have ever thought that what you're doing now and what you're able to do now is possible, you know, that's actually something I think has happened or has been a theme in every conversation I've had on Divination so far, is that everybody's like, you know, I'm even just reaching out to people because their name is everywhere in the Divi community. Like, I've only messaged people or had people on the show who other people in the community have been like, this person's doing good stuff. This person's business is rolling. Their tutorials are great. Their community is great. There's something special about each person insofar as their interaction with the Divi community.
Yeah.
And for that to be something that's like potentially just a year away for anyone who has the wherewithal to plug in and really commit themselves, I think that's incredible. I mean, there are a lot of other communities that's probably possible in, but I don't know that, you know, there's always as welcoming or as many resources and things available for people who want to do that as there is with WordPress and Divi.
I think there's definitely, you know, other careers and other communities where it's possible to kind of have that learning curve and learn quite quickly. But I mean, the biggest point from what you just said for me is that other people are recommending me. So, you know, these are people that are, in all relative terms, competition. They're running their own web design companies and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
But we're still happy to recommend each other, because it's like the feeling of community overcomes even the feeling of competition. And I think how many
I've seen that over and over again. And yeah, you're right. That's really a cool thing about both WordPress in general, I think. But specifically the Divi community seems to be very, I mean, nobody blacklists or tries to hide somebody else. It's everybody's promoting each other. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's great. And some of the people that I've met within the group are now, you know, almost business partners that we, you know, we share that many things. We, you know, they'll put work my way, I'll put work their way. They'll be too busy one week, I'll be too busy the next week. And it's just kind of, it passes between each other. You know, from a client's view, it would be hard to tell where one agency ends and one begins, because there's so much integration there within the community. I think it's really good.
Yeah, which brings us to our main topic, I think. The idea that, you know, as a community, as individuals within the community, you know, we're going to be getting business. We want to make sure that we're handing off the best products to our clients. And if there is a way or a process to get our current best work to another plateau or another level, so taking good to great when it comes to our websites, I think we should all be interested in that. So that's what we're gonna talk about for the rest of the interview. However, in order to get to that point, I think to put that point in context, it might be a good idea, you know, if we're talking about mastering the final 5%, to clearly define, you know, the first 95%.
Yeah.
So in other words, you can take it from here. What is merely a good website?
So I think a good website does its job. So, you know, you go on there and, you know, technically there's nothing wrong with it. You know, everything works. Buttons that should click do click. They clearly look like buttons. You know, the navigation works. You can clearly find things, and you know, you follow a trail. Again, back to that storytelling thing, you can kind of go from one point logically into the next step, and then logically through to, you know, mm-hmm. your call to action, or what is the action that you want that user to take. I think that's a good site. I think if it doesn't do that, then it's not a good site. Even if it looks fantastic, if it doesn't do that and it doesn't allow you to logically follow a step through to what you want that person to do, then it's not a good website.
So what do people do to take that website from good to great?
I think you have to be really, really harsh with yourself, and you have to be very, very honest. And I think that's quite difficult, is because every website is your baby a little bit, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You have to sort of step back from it and look at it objectively. It's like somebody else telling you that your child's naughty. No, they're not. They're an angel. You know, there's no way they are. And you have to go step back and go, well, he is hitting that other child. I think it's the same with your website. You have to kind of step back from it and go, okay, what can I do to ensure that this is kind of better? Now, with anything within WordPress or within Divi or Genesis or any other major kind of platform, I think one of the issues that you'll come around to is that even with the sort of the extensive options that there are to sort of change and edit things, is that things can sometimes look samey, and you'll see kind of a website and almost be able to tell exactly what it was made with, even down to kind of the plugins that we use.
Sure, yeah, I see that all the time.
So I think the first thing that you have to get right is to not design anything on your computer and not think about a theme or anything at first. So get your pen and paper out and just sit down and actually design stuff like you would. If you give a kid kind of a project to go and design your dream house, you don't sit them down with bricks. You know, you sit them down with cardboard boxes and paints and tinfoil and slides. And there's slides coming out the window, and, you know, there's a Ferris wheel on the roof and stuff like mm-hmm. that. Just say to yourself, what is my dream website? Don't think about the limitations of any theme or any platform. And just say, okay, what does this look like and how does it work in an ideal world? If I was the best coder that ever existed and I could build anything in 10 minutes, what would I build? And then get that onto paper. And then kind of be honest with yourself and say, okay, like, of that, what am I capable of doing? And kind of almost try and rein it into what is possible. But always keep that paper there and come back to it and refer to it. What I see a lot more, because people are kind of fighting for websites and fighting to win projects and having to lower their price, is that they can't really afford to include a lot of planning time into a project.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you don't have that time and you don't take that time, then you're going to be fighting against yourself for the rest of the project.
Yeah.
So if your planning process is literally, okay, I'm in Divi Page Builder and I'm building pages, I think you've done something wrong. I think you're doing yourself a disservice. It might seem like you're saving time, but that last 5% is going to be a lot longer if you approach things that way. So almost the first 5% kind of sets the tone for.
I was going to say that sounds like the first, what you're describing is, you know, don't skip the first 5%, i.e. the planning. And then when it comes to the final 5%, you're wanting to what, compare the two?
Yeah, so compare what your dream house was compared to, you know, what you've built, and say, okay, so what are the things that I can do, and start looking at things like your CSS, start looking, okay, that design had this and this is almost that, but what can I use? You know, CSS is quite good at kind of just making, it's the makeup almost of a website. Mm. And you can say, okay, this is going to be
like
the
tweaking those standards that you talked about. Where you can see, like, oh, this no longer looks like Divi because this divider is now tilted or slanted or has some type of variation on it or something along those lines.
Exactly. And it's kind of even down to things like in the design, it was an arrow that took you into the blog post. And then because the read more button is there in Divi, I've just kept the read more button because it was easier. And just take the 10 minutes to kind of learn how to turn that read more button into to the arrow that was in your design, because all those little things made up a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
So you should try and include as many of those as possible in your final design. So I think that's important. I think with the page builder, you've almost got your kind of your HTML and your JS being taken care of for you, with the animations on kind of images and stuff coming in. You don't really have to worry too much about that. The same as PHP, I think the functions that are built into Divi and WordPress are almost enough to take you where you need to be. But it's the CSS that will make the difference between a website that looks like Divi or looks like any other sort of platform that you're using and looks like something that's you. So the good designers out there, the Melissa Loves, the Ginos, you know, you look at their websites and you can tell that they're them. You can't tell that it's Divi because they have a specific style, and it's that style that is the reason that people go to them
and pay
good money to kind of let them build their sites, because they can see, they know what they're getting before they get it, you know?
And let's not forget that with going from good to great, you're also taking your price scale from good to great too.
Exactly.
Which is huge. I mean, that's a big deal to a lot of people, because honestly, you know, I know we've got quite a few more items on the 5% to cover, but when you take it in its totality, it's not actually that much extra work. It's just a smarter process that results in a better product, that results in a higher paycheck. Everybody's happy at the end of that.
Yeah, and I think if you build a website like you're building it on a budget, you'll only ever get paid budget prices. Whereas if you build it like, you know, this is going to be, build it like it's your own site and kind of, you know, this is going to be the thing that represents you as a web designer for, you know, the next 2 years.
Right.
And then I think then you can really see the difference between kind of a good website and a really, really great website that does the job. I think the CSS is probably a big one for me personally, because it's something that I'm quite passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think for anybody, it's worth taking the, you know, Code Academy courses. It's worth getting onto those and the CSS ones if you're not comfortable with it.
And you're starting a CSS class pretty soon, correct?
Yeah. So, I mean, I floated an idea out sort of to our community. And sort of said, okay, so I've got this idea of a course. It's almost like a Code Academy course, but specifically built for Divi.
Oh, nice.
And whether or not there'd be any interest in that. And it was purely kind of speculative at that point. It was just to see whether or not it'd be something people were interested in. We put an email out there and said, you know, if you sign up to the email, we'll let you know when the course is available. And I think when I checked just before we did this, we had something like 400 signups. So there's obviously a kind of thirst for that kind of thing. All of the feedback that we've had on it has been really positive. You know, barely an hour goes by during the daytime hours when somebody doesn't message and say, so any more news on that course? And to have that sort of thirst for information, it's almost like, you know, they want to market for us and kind of take that product and go, okay, when's it going to be available sort of thing. So I think we weren't expecting anywhere near that kind of positive feedback, and it certainly reflected the amount of work that we're putting into the course. It's kind of grown into this kind of mammoth thing that can take anybody from, you know, just kind of, I don't know anything about CSS, so I know quite a bit about CSS and Divi, but I still want to kind of design things that are maybe, you know, that next level up.
That's awesome. I want to get back, because I don't want to lose track of our time. I want to get back to the list of things. What is the list of things in the 5%? What is the squint test? Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, so this is kind of, you can call it the squint test or the drunk test, or, you know, it's up to you. But it's kind of this thing where you kind of close your eyes and you make sure that everything's really blurry and you look for the things that are on screen that really stand out. So on a good website, these are going to be your call to actions. So your buttons, your forms, your email subscribe modules and things like that. On a bad website, you're just going to see a white screen. So I think just close your eyes and just look for the things that are obvious, because people don't, we're in 2015 now, you know, there is a lot of information going out on the internet. There is a lot of websites for pretty much everything. People just don't read like they used to. It's not like, you know, you can just have a HTML page with lots of information and people will read it. They won't. They'll scan. They'll scroll and they'll stop scrolling at things that capture their attention. And these things need to be the things that convert for you. So if they're not, then you need to look at your design again and say, okay, so why don't they stand out? And you can look at, you know, how to make them stand out. So it's silly things like you can have 10 things in a header navigation. So the thing that you really want to push people to, turn it into a button, make it a different color, make it really stand out, you know. Don't just have a subscribe module sort of halfway down the sidebar. Put it at the top of the sidebar, make it a different color, put a massive bit of padding around it so that, you know, it really stands out and it's its own block. I'm not a huge fan of the kind of the pop-up opt-ins that literally pop in the second you've kind of loaded a page, because it's the equivalent of someone standing in the way of the TV, isn't it? You don't actually look at them, you just kind of look around them, and you kind of, you, that's what you do. You close the box and you never look at it. You've never read it, and you couldn't, you know, you don't do anything with it. So I think that's another thing, is just use the squint test. Make sure that your kind of your call to actions stand out. I think the other thing that probably doesn't happen as often as it should is a good proofread and going through. So a lot of sites you go through, and I don't know whether or not it's because we do a lot of content, but I'm one of those people that will go, and I'll judge a site if it's got kind of obvious spelling mistakes. You know, there's one thing to have kind of different spelling for the UK and the US and things like that, and, you know, that's fine. But when you've got obvious spelling mistakes, especially in the first paragraph or something like that, I got, rather embarrassingly, I got a message on Facebook the other day to say that there was a typo in our Facebook page description. And it was kind of like, oh man, you know, that's quite embarrassing, especially considering it had been there for about 4 months and no one said anything. I'm like, cheers, guys. You know, it took 4 months for somebody to tell me. But yeah, you know, just sit down, properly proofread your site first yourself, then accept that the more you read stuff, the more you're not reading it. So step away from your computer, go for a run, have a bath, do something else. Just don't worry about it. You step away long enough that you've forgotten what you wrote and then read it again. And once you're happy, pass it on to somebody else that you trust. Preferably someone quite finicky and kind of, you know, that likes things perfect, and say, okay, you know, do your worst. And just look at their feedback and, you know, try not to take it personally. And just go, okay, you've got typos there, there, and there. And but not even just typos, but does this make sense?
Yeah.
Is this conversational? Does this follow a flow? Is this something that you would read from the top and still be here at the end? And and just take their feedback. I know it's quite hard when other people kind of comment on your stuff and you go, what do you know about it? Kind of, and you can get quite defensive, but just don't. Just kind of step away from it. Forget you wrote it. One thing I do is on any website or any piece of content, actually, is kind of step away and then come back to it as if a client has given me this from another agency or another competitor and asked me what I think of it, because you're so much better at scrutinizing other people's stuff
work,
and finding fault in it, you know? So you'll really kind of get to the nitty gritty of what's good and what isn't. So I think that's important.
What about navigation? Do you have any hard and fast rules for your navigation?
I don't think I have any hard and fast rules. I think one thing's important is that people shouldn't have to go to sort of three clicks in to find the information that's kind of relevant, you know? Say what you are and what you do on the front page above the fold. Just say it out there nice and big so that people, if they're not going to go any further, they at least know who you are and what you do. With things like call to actions, I think be no more than one click away. If you're trying to convert people to a subscribe module for your blog, for example, don't go into the blog and then into the next blog before you find the subscribe module. Don't have it, you know, at the bottom of your sidebar. where people may never scroll to. It's the same for share buttons. You know, put them at the top of your blog rather than the bottom, or both preferably, so that, you know, people, if you look at sites that really are good at converting, so BuzzFeed, Mashable and things like that, share buttons are at the bottom and so are the subscribe modules, because they know that that's where people, you know, spend the most of their time. They get it done quickly. I think other content that is relevant shouldn't be more than two or three clicks away. But again, I think it's about telling that story and about what's the natural flow. So, you know, going from your portfolio and then listing the services that you provided for each of those clients is a natural segue for a link into your services section. Going from your services section is a natural segue into kind of who you are and why you provide these services. Mm-hmm. So just think about the natural sort of navigation. Again, this is where paper comes in handy, is actually just to sit down and do kind of a link map of, okay, so if I'm on this page, where else could I go? How am I going to get there? And how am I going to kind of make that natural?
Yeah, I think something Melissa and I talked about last week was, think of it conversationally as well. You know, I think a piece of paper with like just topic boxes and the idea or the metaphor of a conversation will go a long way. 'Cause the idea that, you know, if you're meeting someone in person and you want to tell them who you are, what you do, and then at some point convert a sale, that conversation is going to have a rhythm. It's going to have a few steps to it. What are those steps, and what might that look like if someone lands on your webpage and has that conversation with not you, but your website? And I think that's a good way of looking at it as well.
Yeah, and you don't talk in bullet points, do you? But so often you see these things just in bullet points on people's websites, and you wouldn't introduce yourself like that.
Yeah.
You know, and just one of the things that I do, especially when I'm blog writing, is get my phone and record myself talking about the subject and just get all of the ideas out, especially the bad ideas out, and then kind of just sit down and listen to that recording and say, okay, so just almost type from the recording and say, okay, that was good, that was good, that was good. Because sometimes it is hard to write how you talk because you never really listen to yourself. So just recording yourself and then hearing that and sort of making sense of that and getting your thoughts into some sort of organized, you know, format is probably a good thing to do on any piece of written content, really.
Speaking of devices, what do you do for multiple devices and multiple browsers? And is that also part of the last 5%?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you should be a hoarder of devices. So I never ever sell old phones. I've got kind of a drawer full of stuff that I just use for testing. You know, I grab my kids' tablets and give me that. I need it. And, you know, I'm going onto the website and I'm having a look and I'm going through. I'm turning it landscape. I'm turning it the right way around. I'm dragging, you know, I'm resizing my window and I'm dragging it from really, really big to really, really small, and I'm seeing what happens at those different jump points. Because it could look fine on your phone, it could look fine on your friend's phone, and then your other friend that has literally a 10 pixel larger phone, it just looks crap on, and you think, okay, so how did that happen? So get used to kind of sliding your browser along so that you can see every kind of, you know, every possible device size imaginable. Use Chrome development tools to get yourself into the different devices. If you go onto the inspect element and then you've got a little icon there with a mobile on it, you can then go in and you can not just change browsers and throttle your speed. Throttling speed's another good one as well. So you should remember that a lot of people are on mobile and they're not necessarily going to be attached to Wi-Fi. So what happens to your site when you're on a lower internet speed? And it's like, holy hell, that looks terrible because, you know, it all loads bizarrely. You know, the stuff that should load first doesn't. Start playing around with the order of your CSS to make sure that, you know, the stuff that's above the fold is the first thing in your style sheet and it's loading, you know. Start looking at the way that you've got files loaded, where your JS is, if it's in the header or the footer. Just things like this are going to be the difference between how your site loads on those kind of slower speeds. And you know, and just little things like that can make a big difference to kind of the final thing. There are huge websites that I look at, you know, are owned by multi-million pound companies that I just can't stay on. I sit waiting so long for it to load on my phone. I go, no, yeah. I can't be bothered.
That happens, you know, a lot to me when I'll see a really fascinating article and maybe like the first paragraph will load and I'll read it. And then literally the experience is so bad. I'm so fascinated in that, but I can't bring myself to stay for it.
Kind of, people aren't going to fight to read your content anymore. You know, you have to make it so easy. People choose the path of least resistance, and if you make any resistance at all between them and your content, you're just going to lose them, and you're never.
Well, there's
gonna
just so much competition too. I mean, nine times out of ten, if that happens, I can Google the headline and see five variations of it that load.
Of the same article, yeah.
Yeah.
Or Google is your best and worst friend, because people that are coming to you organically are, firstly, they're going to kind of believe that you're good at what you do because you came the top of Google for what they were searching, mm-hmm. which is great. But secondly, you're probably one, two, or three in a list of, you know, 225,000 articles that kind of came up as hits. And if your site doesn't load, they're going to go to the next one. And if that site doesn't load or doesn't look right, they're going to go to the next one.
Yeah.
So you need to make sure, doing things like speed tests, like using the Pingdom tools to actually do speed tests on your site.
Mm-hmm.
If it comes up and goes, your site was one of, you know, is the 87th percentile for kind of page speed, that's not good enough. You know, that's out of 100 people, I'm not even on the front page of Google in terms of page speed. So that's not good enough. You want to be looking at the top 5% at least and kind of go, okay, this is where I want to be. What can I do to make it faster? How can I make sure that, you know, it works on different devices? The amount of code that I see being shared, especially CSS, that just doesn't have the browser prefix included in it, and you think, okay, so that's going to be great and it's going to look fine if you're on Chrome. But what if you're not? What if you're on Firefox? What if you're on an old version of Internet Explorer? Mm. You know, it's good
for,
to see
for those who don't know and who are maybe new to CSS, can you just explain browser prefixes to everybody real quick? Most people will, but I think a lot of people are wanting to get involved and that might be something they don't know.
So as standard, your CSS is designed to work on a browser, and it works with Chrome quite well. And then each browser will have its own prefixing. And the reason is because they've got other things going on, and they want to make sure that everything works right within their systems. So you've got kind of WebKit, you've got O, you've got you know, Microsoft, you've got even with Edge coming out, you know, they're trying to move away from prefixing. But you still need to remember that a lot of people won't upgrade to Windows 10 for a long time. So you still need to think about Explorer, which is just kind of, you know, people hate Explorer, especially developers. It's kind of like, you know, a standing joke, and that with good reason. So these things just make sure that your code works, not necessarily the same, but as well as it can. So it won't necessarily look exactly the same on Firefox or Microsoft just because you've used those prefixes, but it will behave the best that it can, and you can make differences. So I can adjust CSS specifically for Internet Explorer or specifically for Firefox, because I know going into those browsers, you know, that they're going to be different, but I can at least try and make sure they play the best that they possibly can. Just having those browsers installed, so there's absolutely these things are free, you know, so there's absolutely no reason that you shouldn't have everything from Opera, Firefox, Explorer, Edge, and everything else that you can on a computer or a device in your house, so that you can test these things on different browsers. When things don't work as well as they can, you know, just try and make adjustments to that specific code so that they do work a little bit better. If you're not sure if a piece of CSS requires a prefix or needs one, you can go to, I think it's caniuse.com. Which will show you kind of, you know, whether or not the CSS needs a prefix to work well on different browsers. So just take the time to do that. It might take an hour, it might take a couple of hours to do, and it might seem like a ball ache while you're doing it, but it's going to be the if you look at the browser numbers, we all love Chrome, and you know, I love Chrome, but it's not the only browser out there, you know. And you need to take into account the other ones when you're building a site. You'll have a client that will be on an old version of Microsoft Internet Explorer. Almost definitely you'll have a client that will just look at things through an old version of Internet Explorer and say, the site you designed for me is crap. And you know, it might just be one client, but you need to keep these guys happy. So you need to do the best that you can for all of the all the browsers.
So we'll recap in a minute, but what else is on this 5% list? And we've jumped around a bit, and we've definitely gone deep on a few of them, so I want to recap in a second. But so far, we've covered a bit. What are some of the last things on that 5%?
So I think the last one, and probably one of the most important ones, is before you put a site out, before you hand it back to a client and you say, okay, are you happy? Ask yourself, are you happy? Because there'll be little things that you kind of let slide, little niggles that will just eat at you for the rest of your life if you send those back to the client and he doesn't notice them and you allow that site to go live knowing that that thing doesn't work properly. So you'll say, all right, if the client finds it, then I'll address it and I'll do something about it. What if he doesn't? What if you send that site out live and, you know, you've got your footer links at the bottom of this site and people are judging you on this piece of work? Again, we've talked about people kind of knowing you from lots of stuff that you do and people that only have one example of kind of knowing who you are. Mm-hmm. If this was that one example, would you be happy with that? Or would you feel like you'd have to call that person up and go, look, come on, let me explain. You know, I'm not like that. You know, I'm better than that. So I think, yeah, always make sure that you're happy. Hand it over to somebody that you trust, or preferably somebody that you don't get along with, that's going to be quite happy to tell you all of the things that you're doing wrong, and kind of somebody that knows what they're doing as well. So another designer or a developer, again, with Divi, you know, the community is huge. You're not going to struggle mm-hmm. to find somebody, even if you just post links out on kind of the Divi theme examples page on the Facebook page and things like that, then you'll get the feedback that you need to make sure that that site looks and acts well on different devices. Again, it comes down to that. You may have done the normal device tests, which, you know, the latest iPhone, the latest Android, tablets and desktops on different browsers. But these guys will all be coming from kind of different devices, from weird kind of little Japanese models that there's only 500 of in the world, and, mm-hmm. you know, way up to kind of every other device on the planet. So they will find the things that you'll miss. It's worth doing that about a week before you hand the project back over, just so you've got enough time. The worst thing you can do is literally you're giving it to the client in 2 hours, and then you post a link to your friend saying, hey, can you check this? So when they come back with the inevitable deluge of kind of information that they need you to change, and you're kind of like, well, I don't even have time to do that now, and you end up putting out a site that you're not happy with.
Yeah.
And, you know, you kind of, am I going to put that on my portfolio? Am I not going to put that on my portfolio? Every site you put out, you should be willing to kind of link to from your site and say, I made that.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to recap, we've got these items in the final 5%. Comparing your final product to your initial paper design, what you sketched and what you ended up really liking on paper.
Yeah.
Performing the squint test to make sure you have prominent items such as your call to actions and your navigation placed prominently and where they need to be. You want to have one click to all of your most important call to actions or services or pages, and then no more than two clicks for everything else. You want to make sure someone proofreads. You want to make sure you browser and device test like crazy.
and speed test.
And
as well.
Speed test. Sure and then finally, you want to get some feedback and refine your site before it goes live.
Yeah. And give yourself the time to act on that feedback, and don't just kind of, okay, now I've got loads of information that I wish I knew, you know, mm-hmm. a week.
Well, speaking of time, I mean, does that ever become, I mean, obviously if, you're only getting feedback at the last minute, time's going to be an issue. But in general, how does taking this last 5% that we've just described, or the final 5% of a project, how does that impact the way that you plan and schedule future projects? You know, say someone hears this episode and they go, this is great, I'm going to do these items on every single project from now on. How's that going to impact their process in general, and what are some kind of changes they need to make to other areas, perhaps like such as pricing and other things, to make sure that this process remains, you know, worthwhile and profitable to them?
Well, I think one thing that we are all guilty of is being very bad at kind of estimating how long something's going to take. We see it in this almost rose-tinted glasses where we go, okay, this is going to go right and everything's going to go well. The kids are going to go to school on time. They're going to come back happy and go to bed like they should. I'm going to have loads of time to do all of the stuff that I need to do. And then the reality kicks in. You go, well, actually, that project that I did last week still has some changes, and the one that I did the week before still has one or two things that I need to do. So I'm not actually going to start this until a week later than I thought I would. And you just kind of just be realistic with your timing. But also say to yourself, like, for me personally, the first 5% and the last 5% we're talking about workload, not timescale. I think just that 10% should probably be about 30% of your allotted time for that project. And that gives you enough time to truly plan. So an example of a site that I'm working at the moment, I've given myself 2 weeks to plan that site. And I think that's a realistic time. So I know people that are knocking out websites in 2 weeks from, you know, cradle to grave.
Yeah.
And I think that I would just be flustered to try and fit everything that I need to do in that time scale, you know. So with the first 5 and the last 5%, I think it's very easy to have a couple of things on the burner and kind of be able to step away from one project and work on another one for a while, and then, you know, and vice versa. But I think it is important to give yourself enough time and say, okay, so if you think about it, that even if I stepped away from this for a couple of days, just so that when I come back, I'm looking at it fresh, you know, you're looking at a week there to do that. And you're going to want to do that at least once in the planning stages of your website. So give yourself that week or 2 weeks to properly plan a site, to hand that back to the client and go, you know, this is what I'm thinking. And it actually looks like you've put some thought into what you're going to do for them. And this isn't just the kind of a template that you've kind of pulled out of your back pocket and you've got ready to go. You know, you've built this for them. And I think a client will appreciate that. And the other thing as well is just little touches. So to and fro with the client or with whoever you're building the site for, saying, I was thinking about this, and what do you think about this? And just involve them as much as you can in the process. Even when we build plugins and things like that, it's never a kind of ta-da moment. It's not something that just comes out and it is there now. Mm-hmm. We are constantly going back and feeding back into kind of our friends and other people using Divi and saying, okay, so, you know, what are your gripes? What do you need help with? What would be easier if you had something that could help you do this? And all the way through, we're kind of we're putting things out and going, so how does that sound? We're pulling it back. We're saying, so how does that sound? We're refining it, and then we're putting out a final product. And, you know, you see the same from Nick and his team as well. You know, we come, okay, what would make life easier? This would make life easier. This is what we're currently thinking about. Does it look good? Pull it back in, then a final product. So don't be afraid to kind of have a to and fro with, you know, the person that you're building the site with. Plan.
Well, it looks like we're running up against our time limit. But at the end of each episode, I like to ask every guest, I'm sure you've seen by now, to leave us with a parting thought that sort of encapsulates their take on our topic. So obviously the topic today, if you're listening or watching, you couldn't have missed it, but I'll repeat it again. Mastering the final 5%, taking your website from good to great. So my final question for you, SJ, is, you know, why should people care about mastering this final 5% and putting out great websites when they could probably get away with just a good or a decent website?
Because a good or a decent website has a very, very shorter shelf life. So this person is not going to, if you want people to keep your work and keep it for a long time and be proud of it for a long time, you need to think of it as a work of art. You need to think of it as a painting. It's something that they're going to stick on their wall and be proud of. That's the 5%. If you put something out there that kind of people are finding niggles in, you know, a month after having it, it's kind of, you know, you get a new pair of trainers and you think, brilliant, love my new pair of trainers. And then there's a little bit of dirt on them. And then, you know, the sole starts creeping away. And, you know, it's not long before you buy a new pair. You buy cheap, you buy twice. If you generally want to deliver value to your clients, take that extra 5%. And it will come back to you in you know, in folds. It really will. So if somebody's kind of looks at your site and you've taken that time to put that last 5% piece of effort in, you're going to find the work that you get off of the back of that will just kind of make it worth that 5%. The fact that you can then kind of put 10% on your charges, 20%, 30% of it, it's not uncommon and it's not unheard of within the Divi community to hear of people doubling their fees in a very short space of time, because they know that putting that last 5% in is going to make all the difference, and people are going to be willing to throw money at you. You know, literally, here, take my money, take it all. Build me something that you do, you weird wizard man, you know, and people do. And I think that's the difference between a 95% complete site and a 100% complete site.
Sounds like a good answer to me. SJ, thank you so much for coming on Divi Nation.
Thank you very much for having me.
All I'm sure I'm not the only one thinking that SJ just provided us with a ton of great insight into what it takes to turn out a solid web project, and in general, just be a successful Divi designer or developer. So I want to thank him again for coming on the show. Up next, we have the winners of our very first Divi Design Challenge. These are members of the community that went that little extra bit to do something special with an often forgotten or neglected part of every website, the footer. Let's check it out. I'd like to thank everyone who participated in the Divi Footer Design Challenge. We received quite a few submissions, but only three that stood out as particularly good examples of elevated Divi footer design. And here they are. First up, we have laurenkstein.com, which was submitted by David Stein. What I like about this footer is how well it fits in with the overall site design and how it manages to tastefully display a lot of information. Really good job, David. Next up, we've got krsites.com, submitted by Kelsey Frizzell. I like how Kelsey went away from anything that looks standard to Divi. This footer still has all the expected content and links most people go to a footer for, but served up in a style all its own. Well done, Kelsey. And last but certainly not least, we've got the website for Natural Instinct Healing, submitted by Madeline Lemieux. Much like our last example, this footer design goes off the beaten path into territory all its own. Madeline did a great job of bringing the mood and aesthetic of the rest of her design down into the footer to complete each page in a way that feels carefully crafted. Excellent work. Well, that's all for this edition of Divi Design Challenge. Once again, I'd like to thank everyone who submitted their work. If you'd like to be featured in a future episode of Divi Nation, as well as on our blog, keep an eye out for new design challenges and submit your designs for consideration. This concludes our fourth episode of Divi Nation. I hope everyone enjoyed the professional wisdom of SJ James, as well as the design submissions we saw from our members of the Divi Nation community. Coming up next week, I talk with author and speaker Phil Simon on how to build an effective personal brand.
So this notion that you can decide to be an actor and you're the next Bryan Cranston, or decide to be a writer and you're the next James Patterson, may happen, but the odds are against it. You really do have to be stubborn and play the long game. Just because you wrote a blog post doesn't mean that the world will read it, that people will tweet about it, that it will go viral.
See you next week.